time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Wednesday edition of the Sports Wrap is ready to go. I'm Sam Yarnell in, as I am every Wednesday, for my friend and normal co-host Jason Page. We got a great show lined up for you today. Friend of the program, JJ Beals, right around the corner to talk NBA and all things going on across the association right now. We'll jump into the NFL news and notes. Lots of news coming out of the league today, and a little NASCAR talk with our friend Tino Patino. He'll join the program for the first time to recap an outstanding 2023 season in NASCAR with a little bit of history at the end. It finished with something that hasn't happened in a decade in the sport. Wrap it up with a couple of stories. And I've got something to say about the Milwaukee Brewers. They're not doing something right. But let's get things started and bring in my close personal friend, AM New York sports writer, JJ Beal. JJ, we're six games into the NBA season and the Wizards, they've only won one game.
Yep. And they don't like playing defense either. I believe they're changing it to just Washington C now, because there is no longer D there.
Worst defensive rating in the NBA, by the way. But we're not here to talk about the Wizards. Let's talk about an exciting team and a team that we talked about just the last time you were on the show, 2 weeks ago, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've gotten off to a 4-3 start. Shea goes for 38-6 on Monday night in their win. Only Kevin Durant and Russ have had more 35-5 games in a Thunder uniform already. Chet's already the first Thunder rookie with multiple 15-point, 10-rebound, 3-block games. Is this a team that can finish top six in the West this year?
Oh, I would say it's a disappointment if they don't finish top six in the West. They have the talent to do so. And yes, they're young, but that's no excuse for this team to not finish top. I mean, they have six players averaging double figures right now. And Josh Giddey hasn't even really gotten going yet. And he's been a candidate for most improved player. So when you look at this team as a whole, I mean, you have Lou Dort, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, Josh Giddey, Isaiah Joe. There are so many good players on this team that are young, exciting and talented. There's absolutely no reason why this team should not be a top six seed in the West.
They're right there to me with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, the Timberwolves have looked great so far to start this year. A huge part of that is Ant Edwards, who was huge in their win against the Celtics. Now, it was the only loss that the Celtics have suffered all year, and it was an overtime loss. They were the last undefeated team in the NBA this year, JJ. Obviously, you have a personal affinity for the Celtics, but are they even better than you expected so far?
They are better than what I was expecting to start, yeah, because, you know, this Celtics team is, you know, adding Kristaps Porzingis, adding Drew Holiday. Those are big pieces that it's going to take time to adjust. I mean, we've seen the same thing with the Milwaukee Bucks, to where you put all these pieces together and you don't put them together to win games in November. You put them together to win games in April. So right now it's trying to figure out how to win those games. And both of these teams have found a way to win games early in the season, but you can tell that it is not a clearly well-oiled machine yet. So, yeah, it's just lots of room for improvement. So just to see where they are right now is a really encouraging sign.
I want to move from the top and the creme de la creme, if you will, in the Eastern Conference to the bottom and these teams that are going to kind of fight for a playoff play-in position when it all comes down to it. The Toronto Raptors. Is this their first year under Darko? Scotty Barnes leading the Raptors in points, rebounds, and blocks. And, you know, looking at their roster, it's not one that lacks talent, especially in the starting five. Can this Raptors team make the playoffs, not just the play-in, in a stacked Eastern Conference?
I don't think so. I mean, like, you look at other teams in the Eastern Conference, I don't see them, like, I think the Nets are better than them. Like, you know, those teams on the bubble, like the 76ers, the Cavs, the Knicks, like, there are lots of teams that are better than the Raptors right now. So I could, you know, they'll make the play-in because the basement of the Eastern Conference is, you know, the basement. But I don't see this. I don't see this team making a lot of noise in the playoffs. Like, there's just too much talent in the Eastern Conference right now, and they have the scrappiness to compete, but not to make any noise.
And by the basement of the Eastern Conference, obviously you're taking a shot at my beloved Washington Wizards. Moving on, you mentioned the Nets. Well, let's talk about them for just a second, because Cam, you and I saw Cam Thomas play in the G League on Long Island just a few years ago. Now he's averaging nearly 30 a game for the Nets and looks like one of the more effective scorers in the league. What's the ceiling for this Nets team this year? And how long is it going to take for them to build a contending team around Cam Thomas? Is he that centerpiece?
I think it's a little too early to call him a centerpiece. He certainly is a walking bucket. And I see the ceiling as in this, like, if the Nets have the perfect season, they win the first round in the playoffs. They somehow, you know, they get matched up against a favorable team, and that's the ceiling of this Nets team this year, is winning one round in the playoffs. But long term, they're building something. You're starting to see that culture come back that we saw those mid-2010s Nets teams before the Harden and the Durant trade and the Irving trade. It was, you know, it's really all about them returning to what made them good, like those D-Lo teams that had the bench bombs every night. And this is what this Nets team is coming back to. And, you know, they're taking some time to kind of gel together and everything. And it's certainly tough with Ben Simmons and, you know, whatever big man they have on the court at the same time, because then you have two non-shooters. So it's tough to space the floor like that. But they're building something, and that's a more encouraging sign than the direction they've been going in.
So realistically, talking about a favorable matchup they'd have to get out of the first round, right? Who would that be when you talk? Because they're not going to finish in the top half, obviously, of the East. So what top half opponent would you say is a favorable matchup for the Nets?
I would say the 76ers or the Cavs. Teams that don't play at a blistering pace, and, you know, something where the Nets can control the pace of the game, because the Nets love to run and gun, get shots up, and play fast. And, you know, these slower teams like the 76ers and the Cavs, who, like, you know, work more in their half court sets, if the Nets can kind of control the pace in those games, and, you know, obviously the size advantage that they have with Joel Embiid makes the 76ers a little bit, you know, obviously they're going to be favorites. But when you have guys down low like Nick Claxton, De'Ron Sharp, Dorian Finney-Smith, those guys that can really make a difference and make Joel's life a little bit more difficult. And then it just comes down to outscoring teams, which Cam Thomas can single-handedly do by himself. So I could see Cam Thomas stepping up in the playoffs and carrying the Nets to at least one series win.
Let's talk about defense now. Instead of run and gun offense and what we all love to watch on a basketball court, the Memphis Grizzlies were supposed to be, and quite frankly, statistically, play really good defense. Marcus Smart still leading the league in steals, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. top five in blocks. Yet the Grizzlies have only won one game. I know they don't have Ja, but JJ, what is wrong with the Memphis Grizzlies right now?
That's a great question. It all starts on the defensive end. Last year, they were a top three team in terms of defensive rating, and this year, they're 15th. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they were ninth last year, and they're 24th this year. They've regressed on both ends of the ball. And yes, obviously, not having Ja Morant is part of that, but it's just team basketball as a whole. I mean, they just need to, like, obviously, Marcus Smart is their fourth leading scorer, or their third leading scorer right now, and he was never that in Boston. So asking Marcus Smart to do something that he's not good at is not a recipe for success, trust me.
I don't think Marcus Smart has been the lead. I don't even think he was the leading scorer on the Oklahoma State team, quite frankly. right? Like, he's never been that kind of player. That's very interesting. So how do the Grizzlies fix this? Is it just a matter of getting Ja back and then snap your fingers, offense is back, we go right back to that ninth-ranked offense because Ja is the offense in Memphis? Or is it something they've got to figure out sooner than that if they want to have any chance at salvaging their season? And what is that?
I don't think their season's in jeopardy right now by any means. It's certainly not going in the right direction. But it's only November. It's the first week of November. There is still plenty of time for this team to figure it out, but they do need to figure it out. So it starts on the offensive side of the ball, because once they start to score the basketball and, you know, stop missing so many shots, it gives those teams a chance to get out in transition, which only hinders their defense more. So it starts on the offensive side of the ball, scoring the ball more, or not even more, just better than they have been. And I do think that, you know, obviously Ja coming back will help that, but it starts with the guys that are currently on the floor right now. They have to be the ones to figure it out so that when Ja comes back, he can kind of fit into that process as seemingly as possible.
That's JJ Beal. Check out all his work at AM New York Sports. JJ, thank you as always, and it's never not fun talking basketball with you on the Sports Wrap.
Always a pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me.
We'll come back, we'll talk NFL and Tino Patino right around the corner. It's Wednesday. I'm Sam Yarnell. This is the Sports Wrap. Sports Wrap rolls on this Wednesday. Sam Yarnell in for Jason, as I am every Wednesday. Go ahead and give me a follow over on Twitter, formerly known as X, formerly known as Twitter. I don't know. I just typed in x.com the other day, and it automatically redirected me to twitter.com. So I think Elon may have lost the war with trying to change the name. Whatever it is, give me a follow at Sam_Yarnell, YARNELL.
I just thought putting in x.com might take you to something else that was far worse.
Ah, the ghost of Jason makes an appearance on the Wednesday show. Halloween was last week, dude. Figure it out. Yeah, x.com, though, probably, you know. Back when Jason first started working, probably did redirect you to a very different part of the internet. Very different.
I know if I typed in just the X, it probably would have been giving me suggestions for something other than Twitter.
Well, suggestions are based on search history, so I don't want to get into that anymore. Yep. Let's get into the sports. Lots of news coming out of the NFL. Not very much of it quite good. We'll start with the Rams. They're signing quarterback Carson Wentz, who has seemingly turned his Instagram profile this offseason, at least, into a Tinder account for new teams to try and come sign him. You know, playing in a practice on a high school field, wearing three different teams. He had like a Commanders jersey, an Eagles helmet, and Colts shorts. It was a long time coming for Carson Wentz. It's a long time coming for the Rams, too. This is them sending it in for the season. They're going to bench Matt Stafford. He won't play. They'll let him get back to full health and go out and try to rebuild this team with the draft and in free agency. You look at their next four, they're home for Seattle. That's going to be a loss because it's Seattle coming off of a really tough loss against the Ravens. They go to Arizona. Excuse me. By that point, Arizona will have Kyler Murray back. They're home against the Cleveland defense. You think Carson Wentz is going to do anything against that Cleveland pass rush? You got another thing coming. And then they're at Baltimore, and Baltimore might put up 55 points on the Rams this year. So Rams sending it in with the signing of Carson Wentz, but nevertheless, stay far away from him in any fantasy league, any DFS betting. He is not your guy. He's never been your guy. He's never going to be your guy. The sad ending for Carson Wentz is pushed off just a little bit more.
Speaking of endings, by the way, is it over for Matthew Stafford? Does he retire? Because I would not be shocked. Sam, I would not be shocked if he retired. Because he's kind of a 1 year at a time guy right now. And given the direction of that organization, he's made tons of money. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if we've seen the last of Matthew Stafford. Can't stay healthy.
I understand the logic, right? He's won his Super Bowl, which was the mountain that he always needed to get over. And it seems like, quite frankly, going into every season, his wife goes on a podcast and puts out a false rumor that he's going to retire. So I won't say it's out of the cards by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that the competitor in him would like to go out in a season where he plays at least the entire season and doesn't just sit on IR for the last, you know, half of the season. That's just what I think. I very well, again, could see the other side that the ghost of Jason is mentioning, where Stafford just calls it a career, and he has every right to do so. The man has accomplished so much, and we talk about Hall of Famers and quarterbacks all the time and the ease with which quarterbacks get into the Hall of Fame. I think even if it weren't as easy for quarterbacks, Matt Stafford is a guy who we should be talking about, because he made terrible teams in Detroit mediocre for years, almost single-handedly, him and Calvin Johnson. And then obviously he goes to LA, joins a super team and wins a Super Bowl. So sending it in, the Rams are this season. Maybe we'll see Matthew Stafford on a football field again. I would bet you that we will. But there's a chance that we don't. There's a chance that we've seen the last of Matthew Stafford. Speaking of quarterbacks around the league, Mike Vrabel named Will Levis the starter in Tennessee going forward. Thank God, honestly. I picked up Will Levis in one fantasy league, and I started him last week. Wasn't a great point output, but I think this could be the end of Ryan Tannehill. We talk about Matthew Stafford being forced into retirement. I think Ryan Tannehill is a guy who we're going to have to start thinking about retiring, you know, from the beginning of his career, but being the chosen one over Matt Moore to get the starting job down in Miami, then moving to the Titans offense, where he was really reliant upon their weapons around him, but made them a playoff contender at least every year. And they always seem to be in the battle for that division. Good for the Titans for moving on to Levis. I think he can carry that offense more than Tannehill could, especially with the state of Derrick Henry and the point that Derrick Henry is at in his career. I think this could be a really good thing. And next season, we may not want to count out the Tennessee Titans. There's a lot that Will Levis could have to offer. All right, the Jets are sticking with Zach Wilson as our train of quarterback news continues on this Wednesday on the Sports Wrap. Thanks so much for joining us. Sam Yarnell in for Jason, as I am every single Wednesday on the program. The Jets and Zach Wilson, I think it's time for the Jets to just send it in. Look, the Aaron Rodgers thing is not happening this season. And quite simply for this, if he comes back, he's going to be coming back to a team that's not contending. You look at the next games, especially coming off of this loss to the Chargers, at the Raiders, at the Bills, versus the Dolphins, versus the Falcons, versus the Texans, and at the Dolphins. Realistically, there may only be two wins mixed in there for the Jets. I think this is a team that is struggling right now. Jason and I talk about all the time how this is such a different team if the first six plays of the year go differently for the Jets offense, but they didn't. And it's time for New York to mail it in. Listen, get a good draft pick and put that person in an Aaron Rodgers offense next season and see what you really got. Manipulate the cap a little bit, offset the money. I'm not sure, but there's got to be a better answer than actually pretending you're a contender this year if you're the Jets, because it's just not happening. They have a way better shot at looking forward to next season and just tanking. See if you can get high enough in the draft that you're looking at a Marvin Harrison joining that offense. The Panthers are adding linebacker Blake Martinez. Jason and I mentioned this yesterday, but wanted to give it another mention today because we didn't quite get into the story of Blake Martinez. This is a guy who bounced around the NFL and then left abruptly at a very good point in his career to go sell Pokemon cards. He made $8 million selling Pokemon cards. Nothing to shake a stick at. I think the card he sold for the most was like just over $450,000 for a single card. Then it came out that some of the cards that he was selling may have been fake, and he may have been a fraud. And the website that he was using called Whatnot banned him from using their platform at all. So now he's going back to play football again because that's what he's good at. I don't expect much from him. Just an interesting story. If you haven't read the story of Blake Martinez, I would recommend doing your own online research about it because there are a lot of contradicting reports, but definitely an interesting guy in that Carolina linebacker room now. So that's something to keep an eye on. The last story is the biggest one and the one that I have the most to say about. The Bengals are not sure about Ja'Marr Chase being good to go for week 10. If you haven't already, find the T. Higgins owner in your fantasy league and go offer that person as much as is reasonably justifiable for T. Higgins. T. Higgins is primed to explode in this Bengals offense. We're coming off of a week where he has season highs in receptions, targets, receiving yards. He has basically half of his season yardage output came in the last game alone. And now you're looking at Ja'Marr Chase potentially going down. Invest all of the monies, all of the draft picks, if you're in Dynasty, all of the players in T. Higgins right now, because he's in earn it mode at this point in the season. If the Bengals don't make the playoffs, he's just trying to earn his next contract because it's not going to be in Cincinnati. They're not going to have enough money to pay Higgins and Chase and Mixon and Burrow and all the weapons. So some of them are going to have to go other places, and T. Higgins is probably number one on that list. He's trying to earn a contract now, and that is going to skyrocket his fantasy value, especially with Ja'Marr Chase out. Invest as heavily as you possibly can responsibly in T. Higgins in fantasy right now. He's about to blow up. All right, we'll come back with my very good close personal friend, Tino Patino. He'll talk all things NASCAR in what was a crazy 2023 season. He's right around the corner. I'm Sam Yarnell. It's the Sports Wrap. Sports Wrap rolls on this Wednesday, November 8th. Tino, first-time guest of the Sports Wrap. Find him as a SiriusXM NASCAR contributor, and we don't talk a lot of NASCAR on the Sports Wrap, but the season just wrapped up, and I thought, what better time than have Tino come on and tell us all about how this season was and lead us into next season. So, Tino, first of all, thank you very much for joining our collective here at the Sports Wrap.
Thanks for having me on, Sam. Big fan of the show. You know, can't wait to, you know, get some NASCAR in the mix here. It was a great season and looking forward to what happened and what's to come in soon with next season. And it's going to be exciting to talk about it all.
So let's start with the end, as is only natural. Ryan Blaney wins his first NASCAR championship at Phoenix on Sunday. He didn't win the race, but he gained the points necessary to win the championship. What did you see from Blaney throughout the course of this season?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, and I'll start off there with Phoenix, right? It was very interesting that he actually didn't win the race because for the last 10 years, the driver who won the race ultimately won the championship. So that was surprising to see. And now, starting off at the beginning of the year, Blaney was one of the strongest contenders. Everyone sort of, when you look at Blaney, if I can kind of put it into NFL terms, he's kind of like the Dallas Cowboys. He really is always there. He's got a good enough team to make a playoff run, to get to the Super Bowl. But that he just never has. He's always come close, you know, a divisional round, you know, maybe a NFC championship game, but doesn't make it to the big game. And that's sort of what Blaney's been known for at this point. Last year, he had a winless season. Prior to that, a 3-win season, a 1-win, 2-win. So he's a young driver. He was getting better and getting better. He's with a great team in Team Penske. Joey Logano won the championship with this team last year. But the expectations for Blaney were he needs to break out soon or else he's just going to be known as a driver that can't get it done, just like the Dallas Cowboys, right? So as we progressed through the season, he had a summer stretch, which was basically a summer slump. He had 15 races where they finished no better than 9th. And that was really interesting to see. Now, you know, you had some cautions and wrecks in there where he was leading or had, you know, contention to win the race and do better than he actually ended up finishing. But in the end, you know, you get finishes like that, and it really put him down in the standings. He had 1 win throughout the regular season there. It was a Coke 600, so a big marquee race for NASCAR there, and that was when he was at the top of the standings. And then that's when that slump really happened, sort of after that in the summer. And then from there, Blaney did end up making the playoffs. He was a 12th seed out of 16. So how the NASCAR playoffs work is there's a round of 16, then you take it to round of 12, round of 8, into the championship 4 in the final race, sort of the Super Bowl to decide it all. And now, I will say, in the championship race and throughout all these NASCAR playoff races as well, it's different than your average NFL, MLB, NBA games, right? When you're playing, it's one-on-one. Well, in NASCAR, you have 16, 12, 8, and 4 drivers in contention to win it all going up against 30 other drivers. So that's what makes things interesting. And you saw that in the championship race where that became a factor with Blaney racing someone in Ross Chastain who was not in contention to win the championship, but was in contention to win the race. And when he got into the playoffs, just to continue recapping his season here, it was insane run that he went on. He and ultimately didn't start off too hot, but advanced to the next round of the round of 12, ended up winning a race there. And that race before he won it, he was 30-1 to win the championship. So he ended up going on and winning that race at Talladega. We capitalized there on a betting standpoint for myself. You know, we knew when Blaney was going to win, and that was important for us here. And then in the round of 8, had a strong run going from at Homestead Miami. Didn't end up winning, but followed it up with a win the next week at Martinsville. Locked himself into the championship 4, and by then the rest was history.
So let's talk about a guy now. We're talking about that contention headed into Phoenix, right? We had 3 contenders, Kyle Larson, William Byron, and the champion, Ryan Blaney. How did William Byron not win the championship this year, Tino? On paper, 6 wins, 15 top fives, 21 top tens. Just looking at it from an outsider's perspective, explain to me, was it an all-time choke job from William Byron?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say a choke job. On paper, for sure, it could look like that. He had a really impressive year, and he was another driver, not to the same extent as Ryan Blaney, but definitely, you know, was due for a breakout year, and he definitely delivered, you know, getting those 6 wins throughout the season, performing. See, with him and where he compares to Blaney here, Byron was consistent all throughout the year, winning poles, leading laps. It seemed like every race he went to, every weekend, they showed up and they could dominate at any time. And they did for most of the part of the year. And he gained such a big points lead. They have the regular season championship as well. He didn't end up winning that. Martin Truex Jr. did. And he had a terrible playoff run, basically the opposite of what Blaney did. But for Byron, he gained enough playoff points, you know, and that's why that's important to gain those stage wins throughout the season, which is essentially the race within a race. And why I mention that is come Martinsville, the final cutoff race to get into the round of championship 4 there, the last final race of the year, Byron was sitting there and he had a plus 30 point cushion to make it into that final race. Now, Kyle Larson was locked in. Christopher Bell was locked into the championship 4, which means there was 2 spots left. And it looked like Byron was going to get it being plus 30. But in that race, he had a terrible run. He had just had a terrible day. They couldn't bring the speed. None of his teammates in the Hendrick Motorsports camp, which is Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, and William Byron himself, none of them really brought speed that race. I mean, they didn't try, but they just didn't have whatever they needed to perform well in that one. And that really set him. Like, he was plus 30, Blaney goes on and wins that race, then he's only plus 12, you know, given the points differential between the two. Well, since he was put in that position, Byron was like plus two, plus four away from making it. So it became a really stressful race for him when on paper, like you mentioned, the season he had, it really didn't look like it was going to end up being that way. So ultimately, he squeezes in just enough points having made that race, made the next round into the championship four. Now we look at that race. It's like the Super Bowl, right? And William Byron, the way the season he had, we'll categorize him as the Kansas City Chiefs. So they still had such a great year. It was Chiefs versus Cowboys, we'll say, because it was Byron versus Blaney there at the end, really. And I will say, I wouldn't categorize it as an all-time choke, because when you put these racers and these drivers and these teams in a position with one race after a 36-race season, you know, some people say it's not fair, or, you know, it's very difficult to do so, like stuff like that. But I keep comparing it to NFL, A, to make sense to you listeners out there who may not watch NASCAR, but B, to also compare it to how other sports work, how major sports work, and how most, you know, the average or avid sports fan watches and consumes the playoffs. And I think it's been great for NASCAR. It's added drama. It's added entertainment. It's added another sense of how to understand it, right? So to answer your question, I don't think it's a choke job, because he did lead stage one and partially into stage two. Again, comparing it to NFL terms, I think William Byron, aka Kansas City Chiefs, just didn't perform well in the second half of that race or of that game. And Ryan Blaney ultimately did. They made the adjustments to the car, right? Halftime adjustments in pro sports is a thing, and it is in NASCAR as well. They don't have halftimes, but they have stage breaks and pit crews and cautions and other team members like the crew chief, who acts like the head coach to make things happen for their car. They just performed better than Byron did, so I wouldn't categorize it as a choke, but definitely didn't get the job done when it mattered most.
What are your takeaways from Ty Gibbs' rookie year? This is a guy who finishes 18th in his first year at the big circuit. Is he your rookie of the year this season?
He is the rookie of the year this year. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, that it's funny because he is the rookie of the year, since there was really no other options. It was him and Noah Gragson coming into this year as the two only rookies in the NASCAR Cup Series. And unfortunately, Noah Gragson got suspended midway through the year, and he did not continue racing on. It wasn't for the fight. It was actually for some poor choices on social media, we'll say, some unfortunate mistakes on his end. And he's learned from that. He had to go to a disciplinary sort of education by NASCAR to learn and sort of get rid of, get a better mindset and sort of be able to get reinstated by the sport. So because of that, he wasn't racing. So at that point, it was basically Ty Gibbs only, like, it was his to lose at that point, and he wasn't going to lose it because he was the only one racing. But I will say, comparing it to those two drivers of Ty Gibbs, Noah Gragson, throughout the season, it looked like Ty Gibbs was going to win it anyways. Gragson did not have as good as equipment, to be fair to him, as Ty Gibbs does, racing in a Joe Gibbs Racing car, which is a premier top three team in the sport. But yeah, you know, I think Ty had a great season. He was up there, not leading laps, but in contention for top fives and top tens throughout the weeks. He's a good road course racer, and he showcased that. Super speedways, like I mentioned, he was up there in the mix. I think next year, you know, he's definitely due for a win at some point. Like, that, you want to see him take that next step. But he's really young driver as well. I believe he's 19, 20 years old, which, to be racing at the Cup Series at that age, is huge, because now he has all this time to learn, sort of like a Ryan Blaney, right? Like, Ryan Blaney's been in the sport for 8 years now, but he's only 28. So it's like, you know, he's still young and he still has time to learn and grow. This championship four this year was the youngest, with an average age of like 28, 29, between all those drivers. Even Kyle Larson, who seems like a veteran now, is only 30 years old. So it's great to see sort of the youth movement in the sport. And I think Ty Gibbs, he's deserving of the rookie of the year, regardless of what happened with Gragson. And I think next year he's poised for a strong season.
It was a tough year for Chase Elliott. Obviously, the freak injury, the snowboarding leg injury at the beginning of the season, had to miss a bunch of time. not obviously didn't finish where he wanted to because of that. What do you look forward to for next season for Chase Elliott, or is it the end for him?
I definitely don't think it's the end. But like you mentioned, like that is a great point, because if he does not perform, if he does not execute next year, it may be the end for him. Like, he will stay at that ride. He has the funding in Napa, and he's a great driver. He's won a championship. So realistically, it will never, you know, be the end for him. But I love that sort of statement there, because what I'm expecting from him is a major bounce back season by Chase Elliott. If he doesn't go out and win at least 2 to 3 races, this was his first winless season in several years that he's been in the Cup Series. And at the caliber of his team, the caliber of his ability, he deserved to be winning races. Obviously, you know, he had that the leg injury, like you mentioned, and then he also got suspended for rough driving. So it's like, all those things considered, it just wasn't really, he missed 7 to 8 races this year. It was not really, you know, all those things compiled really didn't make for a good season, right? When you put all those stuff into one, but still, it was a long season, and all he had to do was win and he would get into the playoffs. They didn't make it happen. Now, like I mentioned, with him being out so many races, it gets harder and harder to win, you know, to end up winning throughout the season. But still, Chase Elliott, to me, a disappointing year. Like, all those things considered, he still should have been able to win a single race, because he is that talented and he is on the best team in the entire sport. So next year, I expect him to come out hot. Like, I am not going to see another winless Chase Elliott season, probably throughout his career. I expect him to go out and win the Daytona 500. I am that high on Chase Elliott next year, because I think the hate he got, you know, whether it's on social media, yeah, you know, maybe you don't pay attention to it, but just, you know, from your own fans, you want to come out strong. You want to prove that you are still that guy, right? He is arguably the face of NASCAR. And you end up having a season like he did. He didn't even finish top 10 in the last race. I thought he was going to be able to do that. And so for this year, or for next year rather, because of this season, I think he comes out strong. I think he wins Daytona 500. I think he gets multiple wins and multiple poles, laps led, all of it. And I think he has a bounce back year next year.
Tino Patino joining us on the Sports Wrap. Check him out on social media at Tino Patino. One last thing, talking about a guy who it is the end for, Kevin Harvick. He finishes 13th in his final season. What are your takeaways from his whole career? And are you looking forward to seeing him in the booth next year with Fox?
Yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing him. I'm glad he's still going to be around the sport, right? That's huge. Having someone as intelligent as he is, as tenured throughout his career, he's been here for such a long time, 20 years now, around there. And, you know, for the position he was in, right, filling in for Dale Earnhardt at the time he did, and ending up winning races and ending up being a true captain of the league. Like, when you look at someone for leadership, respect, how to drive the car, how to fight back, you know, when it's time to do so, A, against NASCAR, B, against other drivers, just sticking up for yourself and really showing that you can be a strong driver, you can be a leader, you can race with respect, and you can also bump fenders when you need to. That's Kevin Harvick. And he was the closer. That was his nickname, the closer. And it's going to be tough not seeing him out on the track. I mean, looking on social media and talking to people at the track, everyone's like truly upset by it, but mostly because it's like that really encapsulates a new era of the sport. He is one of, like, your oldest drivers are Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, and Joey Logano, Martin Truex Jr. Like, they're old, but, like, you think of guys that used to be in the sport, Matt Kenseth, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Kevin Harvick was always in that mix. To now have him out, to have him gone, have him retired, it's tough. And I really wanted to see him get a win there in his last year. He led laps in the championship race. That was great to see. But his career as a whole, great driver, even better person, you know, great sponsors that he brought in, you know, Busch, he was Budweiser Busch, you know, having that partnership there. They'll move over to Ross Chastain next year. So it's good to see that, you know, they'll still have involvement in the sport. And it's tough too, because with his team and that he was on, Stuart Haas Racing, he was the leader, right? You know, we mentioned that already, but not only was he the leader on and off the track, but he sort of elevated them to a higher level. They really did not have speed at all this year, and Kevin would put them in position to win races. And that was him. That was him as a driver. You know, they have Chase Briscoe, Ryan Preece, Eric Almirola is also retiring after this year. He had a decent career, nothing compared to Kevin Harvick, but, you know, giving him his respect there. And, you know, there is talks about Noah Gragson coming back and racing for Stewart Haas Racing next year. But to me, I just think they're not going to be at the same level that they used to be. And that, I mean, that's honestly just a fact, because you don't have Kevin Harvick in the mix there. There's no one there to really elevate them. There's Chase Briscoe, Ryan Preece. You know, they've been there for a while. Maybe they can help, you know, and sort of get that leadership role that Kevin's leaving. But no one's going to fill that void of Kevin Harvick. And that's the thing. It's like, he is his own person. When Dale Jr. retired, there's not going to be another Dale Jr. Yeah, sure, there's going to be a Ty Gibbs or Chase Elliott, right, who can sort of have that popularity. But they're just so different. And I think I honestly put that more out of respect to Kevin Harvick and the Dale Jr.'s and everyone, because they create their own person. They create their own self. They create their own brand. They leave their own legacy on the sport. And I think that, I mean, another guy like Jimmy Johnson, right? You're never going to have, I mean, maybe there will be a 7-time champion again, but what they were able to do, Kevin Harvick is right there in that mix. He only won one championship, sure, but the mark he's left, the legacy on the sport, is will be forever remembered. And that's why I'm glad he's sticking around, because he's great for the sport. And it's going to be interesting to see sort of, you know, maybe no one will be the closer like Kevin Harvick, but who else can create a name for themselves? Ryan Blaney. A lot of doubters on him. Didn't think he'd be able to get it done. He goes out and wins a championship. Maybe now he makes more of a name for himself that there's already that he already has made already in the series so far. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, rookies coming up, young drivers, current drivers that still have something to prove. We'll see who can fill the void for Kevin Harvick.
It's a great time to be a NASCAR fan. It's a great time to follow Tino Patino at Tino Patino on all your social media handles. Tino, thanks so much for educating us about the great sport of NASCAR. And hopefully we'll get you back on the program right around the time NASCAR season rolls around in just a few months.
Yeah, definitely. Short off season. You know, whenever you guys want me on, would be happy to come back. Love the show. Love everything you guys are doing here. Appreciate you having me on, and see you soon.
That's Tino Patino. We'll wrap up the sports wrap when we come back. Sam Yarnell in for Jason on this Wednesday. Wrapping up on this Wednesday, thank you to Tino Patino, friend of the program now, for joining. He'll be back soon. We'll talk a little F1 before the big race coming up in Vegas in just a couple of weeks. Get him back on the program one of these Wednesdays. I was also just reminded, coming back from break, Jason and I still, one of these days, have to get to our sampling of the Y2K Coke. Because now I've got one along with Jason having one.
Why 3,000? Let's make
that clear. Y3K. Y3K Coke.
Y3000.
I found one at a local pharmacy. Jason's had one for as long as we've been doing the show together. We'll have to try that. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. Speaking of which, tomorrow, what a horrible Thursday night football game we've got going on. Bears and Panthers. But something you can look forward to, Jason and I will be handing out our midseason NFL awards. That's right. We'll be giving out the MVPs, the players of the year, comeback players of the year, all of that jazz. Make sure you're tuned in to Sports Wrap everywhere you get your podcast. Make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on right now. And come on back tomorrow once again to hear all of the awards that Jason and I give out. And I'm sure that Jason will say that all of the players to whom I give awards are undeserving, and he'll disagree with all of them adamantly.
You're right.
All right, wrap things up as the ghost of Jason agrees, so we can only assume that's what the future will hold. I got a bone to pick with the Brewers owner, Mark Adanasio. I'm not sure if anyone saw these comments. Actually, many people, I'm sure, saw these comments. If you haven't, go watch the clip or find the graphic. Adonacio made a statement in the media about Craig Counsell leaving for the Cubs and said essentially, you know, screw this guy. He wanted to leave. We lost him. As if he walked away, quit on that team, didn't build anything there, and just moved on to the next best opportunity. This is a manager who was a free agent. And now the former owner is coming out talking like he like the manager owed him something or owed the city or the team, coming back to them at a reduced rate at a hometown discount. Dude, you got to stop making this mistake. This is the second time in a calendar year that Mark Adonacio has gone into contract negotiations with a player or manager, and it's come out with the relationship being almost completely severed. Let me remind you, just at the beginning of spring training this past year, Corbin Burnes, the ace of the Milwaukee Brewers pitching staff, had an arbitration hearing with the Brewers ownership over $600,000. When we're talking about baseball contracts, especially for an all-star Cy Young candidate, ace in a in a major league rotation, $600,000 in a year is absolutely nothing. Yet Mark Adonacio insisted on going to an arbitration hearing so that he could prove that Corbin Burnes was not worth very much money. Corbin Burnes then said that, you know, the relationship had definitely changed, so on and so forth. And I can only imagine after these comments that the same happened with Craig Counsell. As a matter of fact, I would be willing to bet you that when the Cubs offered Craig Counsell the deal, Counsell probably went to Brewers ownership and said, hey, this is the deal I'm being offered. Here's your opportunity to match it. My guess is Adonacio said, there's no way we'll pay you that much money to manage this team. I'll just find someone else to do it. And that's exactly what happened. Craig Counsell should not be held accountable in a bad way for anything that has happened with him and the Brewers. This is yet another letdown from Brewers ownership. And if I'm a Milwaukee baseball fan right now, I'm irate. If I'm a season ticket holder, I'm getting my deposit back. What are we doing, Brewers ownership? This is a team that has completely struggled to find a certified winner since the Prince Fielder Ricky Weeks era, and the two most important, I would argue, pieces of your current team. Maybe you throw Christian Yelich in that bunch, but quite frankly, his production over his career as a Brewer has not been consistent enough. So I would say Craig Counsell and Corbin Burnes are two of the most intricate parts to your success, and you're just going to treat them horribly and let them walk over small amounts of money. This is what the Brewers organization is turning into. This is exactly what they're going to be as long as Mark Adonacio is continues to be their owner. They can't figure out how to get these deals done for cornerstone pieces of their organization. And until they can, they're not going to be a playoff contender. That'll do it for this Wednesday edition of the Sports Wrap. Jason's back tomorrow. Make sure you're tuned in. We're going through all of our NFL midseason awards, and we'll have a preview of the horrible Bears-Panthers Thursday night football game. My gosh, the NFL has to do something about these standalone games. That was the ghost of Jason hurling in the background, because every single primetime game this weekend is horrible. They're all bad. The real football fans are going to come out of the woodwork this weekend. Remember, if it was the middle of July, you would kill for Panthers-Bears. So let's be a little grateful that we got it when we do. That's it for this Wednesday edition of the Sports Wrap. I'm Sam Yarnell. Find me on X at Sam_Yarnell. Jason's back tomorrow for the Thursday edition. Have a great day, everybody.